Good morning. It is 10:01 a.m. We are here today, June 2nd, 2026, via Zoom meeting for the motion hearing of OPAPA 26-001, General Pacific Services LLC versus the Department of Public Works. Presiding over the hearing today is Hearing Officer Joseph B. McDonald. For the record, also present from the Office of Public Accountability are Jared Hernandez and Joy Esperanza. Will appellant GPS please identify themselves and any institutional representatives present for the record?
Good morning, Mr. Hearing Officer, Mr. Hernandez. This is Joshua Walsh for the appellant GPS. Mr. Phil Roberto and Mr. Robert Tolkis from the appellant are also joining the Zoom call. Good morning.
Thank you. Will purchasing agency DPW please identify themselves and any institutional representatives present for the record?
Linda Ibanez, Deputy Director of DPW.
Government Counsel, please identify yourself.
Paul Sermons on behalf of the Attorney General's Office, representing, well, Patrick Layler has gone off island, so appearing on his behalf.
Thank you. Will interested party Cortec International Corporation please identify themselves and any institutional representatives present for the record?
Good morning, Mr. McDonald and Mr. Hernandez, appearing on behalf of interested party Cortec International, Joyce Tang and Serena Kessler. Thank you.
Thank you. You may proceed.
Okay, good morning, everyone. We're here for the motion hearing on motions to dismiss filed by DPW. Before proceeding, does anybody have any procedural matters that they want to bring up?
No, on behalf of Project.
I just had one question of clarification. I know Mr. Searman's entered his appearance on behalf of the AG's office in place of Mr. Layler. I'm assuming that means he represents DPW this morning.
That's my understanding.
Okay, thanks. And I see Mr. Keeler's there, but I don't know who's arguing their motion. But as long as we know DPW's got counsel, I'm good to proceed. Thank you.
Mr. Keeler, are you just observing? Mr. Simons, do you know if he's just observing?
I do not know.
My apologies for the delay. The answer is yes. I'm just observing. I'm a member of the public.
You still are with the Attorney General's office, is that correct?
No, I retired in January of this year.
Okay, very good. Well, congratulations on your retirement.
Thank you.
Mr. Simon. It's DPW's motion. Why don't you go ahead?
Okay. Good morning, all. As Mr. Layler's brief, I think, summarizes the issues quite clearly, that this matter comes before us, but yet I think is a little premature, as the bid process had no award had been made. So I think Mr. McDonald's subject matter jurisdiction is premature.
Ms. Tang, on behalf of interested party.
Thank you, Mr. McDonald. There are basically four issues that were raised, and I'll address them quickly as you've seen in the briefs. I think this is a very simple issue. The issue of subject matter, as you are aware, subject matter jurisdiction can be raised at any time by any party. And GPS argues that CTI waived the right to challenge jurisdiction. That's simply not correct. As you recall, at the hearing on May 6, 2026, you raised the issue of jurisdiction, and the parties agreed that CTI would be allowed to file a joinder by no later than May 7th, which we did. So I think that this argument of waiver is really frivolous. Second, this joinder is properly before the hearing officer, and for all the reasons we discussed earlier, and the hearing transcripts which we cited to with the timestamps also confirm that. So I think that both the issue of whether subject matter jurisdiction can be raised at this time and by any party, in particular CTI, is resolved, and also the no waiver issue is frivolous. The third issue I think that they've raised is that they argue, GPS argues that the substantial interest in determination proceedings confer jurisdiction over the appeals, the three appeals. That is just bad. That's just wrong. They conflate the 5GCA 5425G substantial interest and determination statute, which with the section 5425C, which requires a decision on protests for solicitations. The hearing officer's review of a substantial interest determination in the 5425G is a distinct statutory proceeding triggered by DPW's submission of a written determination to override the automatic stay, and is not triggered by a decision on a protest. That is undisputed. So the agency, because there is no agency decision under 5425C, which would confer jurisdiction for the appeals, there is no basis. The substantial determination, in substantial interest determination proceeding does not confer jurisdiction. And today it's undisputed, there's no decision on the protest, and this proceeding under substantial interest determination cannot substitute for that requirement of a decision on the protest. Lastly, they argue, GPS argues that in section 5425, there is an argument, some because it requires the agency to issue a decision on the protest, that is somehow gives rise or should be interpreted as a constructive denial provision that when we find in 5427F. That's simply not true. 5425 applies to solicitations, pre-award protests. That's very clear. 5427F applies to contractors post-award protests. And so the post-award protest provision for constructive denial is only applicable and can only be found under 5427F and applies to post-award. This is not a post-award protest. Or and so for that reason, the argument that the constructive denial provision should be read into 5425 should be rejected. The bottom line is this is pre-award, there is no jurisdiction, and there is nothing, there is no decision from which to appeal from, and this motion to dismiss should be granted. Thank you.
Mr. Walsh, response.
Thank you, Mr. Hearing Officer. Just a couple of points. I agree with Mr. Siermans that the briefing, I think, is pretty binary on some of these issues. I think Ms. Tang's argument highlights them well. I think the public auditor's just got to make some decisions here about where we go. So on that point, a couple of things. Ms. Tang's argument, the idea that jurisdiction is not waived as an argument. Look, I need to protect my client's rights. So I think we need to get to the idea of, are we properly before the OPA? I wouldn't be comfortable with simply a decision that says CoreTech has waived all this. I mean, I think they have, because we could have fought this earlier, but I do think that we're here. So let's get a decision on why we are here now. That's especially important because CoreTech continues to have in its briefing this sort of position that maybe the automatic state is not properly here. So I don't know what that means after the SID. I don't know why that's continuing to be briefed. I don't know where that's going, but because of that, I am going to hold my markers down on we're here, you know, they're challenging jurisdiction minute too late, especially if the ultimate goal of that is to somehow try to come in and attack the automatic stay. The SID is not a protest. I got that. But I do think that even if we had not protest, if we had not, and we did, but even if we did not independently appeal the SID submission that came in on the Friday before Super Bowl weekend, that the protest itself was jurisdiction enough to get GPS before the OPA. So that's, I think, the reason for the importance of saying that while the SID is not the protest, that we are before the OPA, which means that the OPA did have the power to weigh in on the SID, and I think has the power to do what I'm asking for next. I completely agree that the Guam Code annotated in the contract resolution portions of the procurement code for the OPA's powers limit that 60-day constructive denial to the word of construction in the contract disputes. That statute, the analogous statute on the agency making a prompt decision, doesn't have that 60-day time frame for a constructive denial. I'm not going to say that there is, but I do think that's pretty indicative, and I think the previous public auditors, Doris Brooks, used that as sort of indicative of what's a good timeline here. You know, if we filed a protest in November, and if we had done a contract dispute in November, 60-day clock running, this would be over with. So why are we well beyond 60 days? So I think while I recognize that one statute has a 60-day constructive denial and the procurement code protest decision clock doesn't have that, I think that's just a legislative oversight of it. But 60 days, I still haven't heard a reason from the agency why we need more than 60 days and why no agency's coming down, agency decisions coming down. And I think just ultimately, Mr. Hearing Officer, the only pathway that makes sense, if the public auditor's office is not inclined to proceed forward on this without an agency decision, the only path that then makes sense to preserve confidence in the procurement system and confidence in the procurement code and avoid absurdity is to do what the public auditor did in OPA PA 15-005. Everybody's briefed the idea of Pacific Data Systems versus GPA. And that's one where the public auditor says, hey guys, I'm not gonna proceed forward on this, but agency make a decision by a date certain. So you have the power, and that has I haven't seen anybody challenge that or anybody flip that ability of the public auditor to issue that order that a decision be made. Now, I understand that the argument also gets floated by the government and the interested party that, well, you don't have mandamus power. You know, you're making your own writs of mandamus. No, I think if you look at the broad powers of Title I and the public auditor's powers generally in terms of what you can order agencies to do, the public auditor has lots of power to order agencies to take lots of action. And I think giving them a date certain to make a decision here so this moves along makes sense. And I think the other thing that everybody, or at least the other parties briefing the matter, seem to miss is that OPA PA 15-005 has a contemporaneous case, OPA PA 15-007. That's PDS's other protest at the same time. And that's the one where you get the case coming back. So GPA, PDS is told, you know, I'm dismissing your case and I'm ordering the agency to make a decision. Well, OPA PA 15-007, you've got that process continuing. On May 14th, I mean, after GPA is told to make the decision by the public auditor, they do. And that comes back to the public auditor's office on an appeal, and that case moves forward. And that's what we should do here. I guess, and then the last point I'd make is, I don't understand how this advances anything in this procurement. Telling the agents, telling GPS to have its case dismissed, even with an automatic stay in place, which we know it will be, and having the agency sort of be given no clock to make a decision, or just make a decision whenever it wants, you know, with all deliberate speed, without a timeline, to just turn back on the precedent from the OPA before, from 2015. And to simply let DPW sit on it, I don't know how that gets Sanchez built, how it gets anything resolved. So I think all that does is weaken the public auditor's office and takes what was an exercise of power that the government of Guam has accepted long before, that the public auditor's office can order an agency to make a decision on a case that it has stalled. We're going to weaken the public auditor's office and create a world where the agencies can simply sit on decisions. And then maybe, I guess, the last Alamo position I'd suggest to the public auditor's office is if for some reason the public auditor decides that it doesn't have the power to order an agency to make a decision in a time certain, perhaps you could broker that decision and find out from DPW when the decision would come. Even, you know, we've tried to do that before. I recall the public auditor or the Mr. Hearing Officer, you sort of suggesting that it would be good to get an agency decision. I remember asking Mr. Areola, well, are you saying there's a chance that GPS wins the decision? Perhaps somebody from the agency can sort of let us know where they are in the decision-making process. And, you know, maybe it's one of these things that we don't have to get an order because the decision's coming out tomorrow or not. But look, I think it's a pretty straight up or down decision here ultimately on the briefing. And then on this question of does the public auditor have the ability to order an agency to make a decision that it's been sitting on for months? Thank you, Mr. McDonald.
Okay, reply by DPW. That's you, Mr. Simons.
Again, I think it's premature and stand on Mr. Layler's brief.
Ms. Tang.
Thank you. First of all, I'm just being nothing in appellant's response addresses the critical issue of there's no protest. I mean, there's no decision, therefore no jurisdiction. And if there's no jurisdiction, the public auditor's office cannot order any agency to do anything. I think that's just clear black and white. Now, he refers to, counsel refers to the PDS cases, and I believe that the issue was not objected to by the parties, I believe, and but it's very clear, I think, this issue has not been litigated. And so it is being litigated now. It's been briefed, the issue of jurisdiction and whether the public auditor has the power without jurisdiction to order an agency to issue a decision. So I think that's clearly before you today. Last thing is I will note that the opposing counsel has conceded that the legislature, that section 5425 does not contain a pre-award constructive denial provision, because he did say that while it was probably a legislative oversight, well, clearly this needs to go back to the legislature. It's a province of the legislature to make law, not the OPA, not the courts. And so they've conceded it. And I think this issue needs to be addressed by the legislature and not by through a decision from the OPA, especially where the jurisdiction is clearly a contested issue and where we believe does not exist. Thank you.
Okay. Mr. Simons, why has there been no decision?
I'm sorry?
Why has DPW neglected to make a decision?
Because of the automatic stay.
That's with respect to the award. Who's speaking for DPW? Who are the business principals at DPW that are prepared to speak to this issue? Is that you, Ms. Ibanez?
Yes.
Can you tell us why DPW has not issued a decision to this point?
So our attorney representative, Patrick Layler, provided briefing on it, and our response was we were on status quo on responding to the protests.
Okay, I don't want to hear like what lawyer told you, but what has DPW discussed internally about why there's been no decision issued?
So we still have an attorney-client privilege. And so That is on the attorney to represent DPW's response on it.
Okay. Mr. Walsh.
Yes, sir.
Doesn't GPS have a plain, adequate, and speedy remedy by filing mandamus by itself?
No, we've got to. Getting a writ from the Superior Court of Guam while we've got administrative exhaustion procedures ongoing is a hole that's useless and will be recognized as useless. Especially when we've got direct precedent from the OPA that tells us that this office, the Public Auditor's Office, can order an agency and has ordered agencies in the past to make decisions on pending procurement protests that the agency has sat upon. So filing a writ action in the Superior Court to burgeon and make bigger a procurement dispute that should be solved at the agency level by an agency decision and hasn't been since November is just the wrong move. I think just the wrong strategic move, but just wrong under the law, respectfully. Because we do have what is supposed to be a prompt administrative pathway here, which is a protest to an agency that makes a decision, a protestant that can take that decision and either accept it or appeal it quickly to the OPA, and then we resolve it there. And then only after resolving it there do we go to the court. What I'm hearing now is the Attorney General's or the DPW is somehow taking a perspective that a protest causes a stay that prevents a protest decision. Or prevents them from working on a protest decision? If that's what they're gonna, I don't know how that is any read of the law and takes us anywhere other than just into a circle of absurdity. We need a protest decision. I've litigated issues into the Superior Court where court says, don't see us until you get a decision from the OPA. The OPA says, don't see me until you get a decision from the agency. It's a pretty straightforward thing to have the OPA tell the agency to make a decision. We know this is supposed to be prompt. And I appreciate that the Cortex seems to think I've conceded something. I'm conceding English. I understand that the contract dispute provision says 60 days. I don't think this needs to go back to the legislature. The public auditor is looking for a definition of prompt. When should an agency issue a decision? The decision should be prompt. So if you were looking for guidance in terms of defending the word prompt, like courts, you look for guidance without having to go back to the legislature. You look at the overall structure of a statutory interpretation argument from any sort of world of statutory construction. What would be a definition of prompt that would cover an agency decision in this section of the code? Well, I suggested be from the paragraph before where it says 60 days. So I still think that we are well beyond what would have been a prompt decision. And running the court when all of our pathways are clear through administrative law seems to be nothing more than an invitation to make this case wider and larger. And let me just play that out one more moment here. If the Public Auditor's Office issues a decision that says, we are following precedent and we're going to do what we did in the OPA. Joshua, you have your client's appeal will be dismissed. The stay is in place, but it's being dismissed pending an agency decision that I want in 2 weeks. Then we'll be back here in 2 weeks and we'll be moving along. And that should be fine. Unless Cortec decides to appeal that or the Attorney General's office decides to appeal that and says, you could never have ordered what had happened back in 2015 with PDS and GPS. Or the inverse happens. If the Public Auditor's Office decides that it's going to neuter itself and remove power that it has exercised before and say, I can't do anything, an agency can sit on a protest forever and ever and ever, and Joshua, your only option is to go to the court, then I'm going to the court in two pathways. I'm going to go to the court to get that writ, because now I've exhausted an administrative remedy thanks to a decision of the Public Auditor saying, I don't have the power to give you what you clearly had the power to give in 2015. Then I'm also going to appeal that decision to try to get the OPA to understand it still has that power. But the fastest move here, the best way to do this is to not keep moving in the quicksand that DPW invites us into. It's to simply follow existing law. Do what OPA PA 15-005 and 007 showed us. A pathway where the public auditor orders an agency to make a decision. Mr. Searman's client could decide if they want to appeal that, but I don't see why they would do that. They would just make their decision. They've had months to do it, and then we'd be back here as soon as you'd like us to be on the merits of that appeal that I would bring, assuming that they don't select GPS for ultimate award.
Okay.
Response to just that one.
I'm going to finish with my queries, and then we'll go ahead and go around the table.
Thank you.
So subsequent to that case, those cases you're talking about was the SH case. And in the SH case, the Supreme Court very wisely narrowed the jurisdiction to only reform contracts. And so if you look at the text of what's in the SH case, it seems like that is the only non-statutory power that the OPA, it seems to read that way, that's the only non-statutory power given by the text of the statute that was allowed. So how can the OPA then create what is essentially mandamus when there's no mandamus text, given the wise circumscription of the powers by the Supreme Court?
I assume that question's for me.
Yes.
Yeah, I actually don't see SH as a statement that says the OPA can't do what we're asking it to do or what it's done in the past in terms of ordering an agency to make a decision. And the reason I don't think that's the case is because I understand your concern about wanting to find a particular statute saying that the OPA, in addition to doing A, B, and C, can do part D, which is order an agency to make a decision. But I think that's asking for too much specifics. All of the enabling statute at 1 GCA 1908 for the OPA has these broad powers given to the OPA, which is created as an independent entity here. It's not one of the branches of government. It's not a court with a limited scope of jurisdiction. The public auditor's office is told to, you can compel information, you can impose fines, you have subpoena powers, investigative powers, corrective actions, you have writs of mandate ability, you can go to the court and take actions against agencies if you feel it's necessary, right? All of that is in the power wheelhouse of the public auditor's office, not the protestant. So with all of that power, I think the public auditor can fashion anything. If the public auditor was worried about just telling an agency to make a decision, public auditor can issue three subpoenas and say, why haven't you made a decision under oath? When are you going to make a decision? What's the logic behind not making a decision? I don't want to get into a legal privilege discussion, but agency, why aren't you doing this? There are all sorts of powers there to do that, which I think in contradiction to, or not in contradiction, but in a fine point on SH, tells us that the public auditor has the ability to do all of these things that are necessary to promote public procurement and confidence in the procurement system. So I do not think, barring somebody showing me a direct case that says ordering an agency to make a decision was beyond the power of the OPA, and we don't have a case that says that. Nobody appealed that, and the government's acquiesced to that before, and GPA has been good with that. Short of something that says you can't do that, I think 1GC, along with the powers of the procurement code, let the OPA do this. Now, you may not be able to sua sponte on the spot, go off and start debarring people, which I think was a problem that the briefings pointed out in terms of some exercise of power in the past. But there's nothing sua sponte about what's going on here. We've got a procurement dispute. We got a problem in procurement confidence here from the public. So I think the public auditors can use its Title I power to keep the confidence level up.
Okay, any response to that from Mr. Simons?
I get worried when we force people to do things. And, you know, not taking an action is one thing, but compelling someone to act is a is quite an unusual remedy. And I don't believe that unless that power were enumerated in the statutes, then wisely was withheld. And I would be worried if a public auditor had such broad powers as to, I mean, where would that stop? And if it's not enumerated, then you're granting yourself statutory authority.
Okay, Ms. Tang?
Thank you. First and foremost, the powers that opposing counsel discussed are specifically not with respect to the procurement appeals. Whatever power the OPA has are enumerated and stated, expressly stated 5425C. And there is no power to compel an agency decision in 5425C. Secondly, Mr. Walsh also has admitted that, look, GPS made what he called a strategic move not to pursue a mandamus, a writ of mandamus in Superior Court. That is, as you had indicated, a remedy. And the stay, the automatic stay, does not prohibit that. They just made a strategic decision not to do that. That does not, and what they're looking for is the OPA to issue what would be the equivalent of a writ from a Superior Court, when the OPA does not have such powers under 5425C. That's exactly what he's asking for. And there is no basis for that. This, I think it's very clear there's no jurisdiction. There's no question the OPA does not have writ powers, writ of mandamus powers under 5425C. I think we should be done with this issue. If they feel that the agency should issue a decision, they could have done it months ago. They've sat on it for months. He obviously knows that he could file that writ. They made a strategic decision not to. Do not try to compel the OPA to do something that it is not empowered to do. And I think that resolves the issue before the OPA today. The motion to dismiss should be granted. And I think we're done.
Thank you. One more question. I forgot to ask this, Mr. Walsh, and I will give you a chance to respond to that. But I want to get all my questions out so the parties can respond before we give you, since it's your motion, final word. Tell me how it is that subject matter jurisdiction can be waived.
No, I don't think you can. I don't think parties can waive into subject matter jurisdiction. I don't think we can do something that a statute doesn't allow to happen. I mean, if you actually believe that the case cannot be before you until there's an agency decision, and you believe that the public auditor's office does not have the ability to order an agency to make a decision, then I guess we should get that law sorted out here. And if you want to say you want to backtrack on the explicit instructions that every bidder operates or has operated under since 2015 over what we do and not give any guidance at all to an agency about what the word prompt means in the statute on the way to make a decision, then I guess give us that decision. And since my protest is in place, I'll deal with what I have to deal with next. You know, there's not a strategic decision here to sort of try to get people to get into a subject matter jurisdiction waiving issue. I don't think people can just agree to subject matter jurisdiction. I think a court or an administrative body without subject matter jurisdiction still has administrative jurisdiction over its own processes, of course, right? You know, you don't go to a court and say, you don't have subject matter jurisdiction, therefore I don't have to follow the orders that you give me, you know, giving me a hearing date or telling me to do things. So there's certainly jurisdiction to take action there. But, you know, this idea that we should be at court when an agency decides to not follow a statutory requirement to issue a prompt decision is an invitation to chaos. It's an invitation to go into 10 years of DFS carnival action at the Superior Court and just skip the OPA, which I'm not going to do until you tell me I have to skip you, because otherwise I don't think I can meet a Rule 11 signature requirement to not follow what I think to be the law, which says agencies make decisions promptly. Those decisions get appealed to a OPA. The decisions of the OPA go to the Superior Court and then onward from there. If we're going to get into a world where the OPA is not going to step in at all, a protest comes to an agency and an agency can take the word prompt and define that as never. How about never? We'll give you a decision never. Then if that's the decision of the OPA, we'll have to deal with what comes next. But that is an invitation to a carnival atmosphere where litigants decide to go to court first rather than deal with agencies or the OPA.
Okay, sorry, one more follow-up before I allow the other parties. I mean, you've heard, did we lose Mr. Walsh? Oh, there you are.
I'm here.
We've heard the agency's response, including counsel's response, about issuing a decision. Why wouldn't you be allowed to allege frustration?
You mean frustration is like a contract provision? What do you mean frustration, sir? I'm sorry.
Well, one of the exceptions to obtaining administrative relief is frustration, as you know from the Story Bernardo case.
Yeah, I do.
So, So why don't we have frustration here?
Because you are entertaining my arguments and the precedent from the OPA tells me that this is the methodology to compel an agency to make a decision, is to go to the OPA, who is imbued with all of the power in Title I to keep our contract world going, to go with that, with the ideas from the Rules of Civil Procedure and general jurisdiction that we should have fast, speedy, less expensive resolution of actions. I am not frustrated because I have the Public Auditor's Office. If the Public Auditor's Office decides as a result of this matter to say we don't get involved at all until there's an agency decision, if that's going to be the we're going to vacate PDS, vacate what all of that means, and that the public auditor is no longer going to weigh in on anything until you get an agency decision, then once the agency gives me no decisions, then I know I can't go to the public auditor anymore, and that I guess leaves me with the court. But until that moment, I'm not frustrated. All I would do is, if I ran to court, we have a court tell me, have you not seen PDS, Josh? You haven't exhausted it. Go back to the OPA. So that's why we're having the hearing today. And that's why we're going to look in eagerly forward to pushing the law here and developing these decisions. Because if the OPA ultimately decides, Mr. Hearing Officer, that it's going to backtrack on its previous efforts and previous instructions and previous guidance and say that we are powerless at the OPA and cannot do anything until an agency makes a decision, can't even prompt the agency decision, or we can't even get the parties in a room and say, why haven't you made a decision? Or can't even suggest it, that none of these conversations should happen, then I guess that does limit what we can do. But I don't think there's frustration as long as I have an administrative remedy where we're arguing about it, where we're talking about it. You know, and in fact, it's not one something where I'm arguing the opposite. The people arguing the opposite of the precedent is the government and the interested party. They're the ones arguing that somehow you don't have the ability to order an agency to make a decision.
Okay.
So,
sorry, did you have anything else on that score? Okay. Before I give Mr. Walsh the final.
It's Mr. Searman's motion. Sorry, it's Mr. Searman's motion to dismiss.
Yeah. It's his. Okay. So, I guess for summation, Mr. Simons, do you have any final responses to make on your motion?
I would say that truth requires few words, sir. And Mr. Walsh could have waited to file this protest after DPW made a decision and did not. We are stuck with the statute as drafted, and rest on our brief. Thank you.
Ms. Tang, in your joinder.
Thank you. Nothing that Mr. Walsh has offered with respect to the question you asked. How is it subject matter jurisdiction can be waived? Changes the black letter law. You can't waive it. I think he agrees. I know he goes around and around in circles, but there's it just can't be waived. Second, his comment that in the DFS cases in which we were counsel to DFS, we skipped DOPA. That's just flat out false. There was no skipping DOPA. The record will show that in the DFS cases, what happened was the OPA had to disqualify itself. And that was before the court had jurisdiction of the protest denial. So this idea that it was skipped, it's just flat out false. And he should know this because he was in the firm at that time. So I just want to be sure that there is no misunderstanding as to what happened in the DFS case and what the record shows. With respect to, in summary, there's no protest, there's no decision on the protest. Therefore, there's no jurisdiction today. And the appeal cannot proceed. The protests were filed back in November 2025 and December 12, 2025. Okay? He's had over 6 months to run into Superior Court. He did not. His client did not. GPS just sat there. They knew they had these rights. They made a strategic decision not to do anything. And now they're complaining to the court, this OPA, and telling you that you should expand your powers when the Supreme Court clearly said you shouldn't. And the law does not support, the statute 5425C does not support such powers. And certainly not the powers of a writ of mandates. This motion should be granted, and we close with that. Thank you.
Okay, very well argued. Thank you, parties. We'll take the matter under advisement and be issuing a decision shortly. Does anybody have any ministerial matters to bring up?
No, thank you, Mr. Hearing Officer.
Not on behalf of Fortet. Thank you.
Yes, sir, thank you.
Okay, everyone have a nice day now.
Thank you.
We're off the record at 10:44 a.m. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you.